the 7th of November, 1971. The top motor center, Huntsville, Alabama, interview with Dr. Walter Nirnberger in the presence of David L. Christensen and Frederick I. Ordway.
We're talking about the Haida Kraut site.
Yeah, we're okay on that, I think.
Yeah, okay. You occupied that for about 8 weeks. After you went off
from Haida Lager.
Haida Lager. Now, what was the condition of Haida Lager when you left?
Haida Lager, it's a huge first left there. You didn't have any prepared stations, no tests, anything like that. It was a first concrete platform.
I see.
Or a wooden platform, or sheet metal platform. Where he launched from. It was all
so you left everything more the way it was.
More building engagement.
Engagement. Now, how big an operation did you have there at the height? How many people was
it? Approximately 800.
About 800 people.
800.
And when you were there, you lived on the train.
You lived in
the rest of the people lived on temporary
barracks.
Later, I'll show you a map made by the Polish underground,
of
which I'd like to know how accurate it was.
Okay,
then the whole operation moved to the Haida Kraut.
Then the Russians advanced to Japan.
Right.
Then you had to move. You couldn't fire anymore from there. And then you moved to Haida Kraut. You fired in the opposite direction.
You fired south. You fired actually from in a north-easterly direction.
And now you fired from north to south.
Yeah. Okay, from the Haida Lager camp, what was your general range? We have on our maps downstairs two target areas. Teal, T-I-E-L, is Teal?
Yeah.
Teal 1 and Teal 2.
Yeah.
So that you tried to impact...
Teal 1.
Teal, you said.
Teal.
Yeah, Teal.
Teal 1, Teal 2.
Teal, right. And you tried to get one or the other of those...
No, some firings were done in this direction or the other one. For example, if in the target area... People were exploring, we had went and took their measurements. We fired at the meantime at the other.
At the other target. So one of the two.
Two target areas.
And everything was recovered.
Everything was recovered. We tried to recover. We lost a couple of them we didn't find.
Yeah, and I guess the Poles got one of them.
Yeah.
And from there, we'll talk about that, I think, a little later, and I'll bring the mountains up. Then you moved to Haida Lager and Haida Kraut. And from there, you launched directly south?
Directly south, into the same target area we fired from Haida Lager, but from the opposite direction.
Oh, my God, that's I didn't realize that. I'll bring the map up in a few minutes, So, I thought I'll go ahead and do that. Say, you can start putting on the tape.
You fired from one to the north.
Yeah.
In one time area. And then we went to Haida Kraut, we fired from north to the same target area.
The same target area on the River Belt in that area.
Yeah.
Now, was there any reason? Weren't the Russians in there by that time?
No. The Russians were in the fire season, the launching fire.
But they didn't get to the target area. No. Yet the target area is further further east.
No, the target area was south from Haida Kraut.
Yeah. But the target area from Haida Lager was northeast, according to the map.
Right.
Let me get the map, sir. Dave, why don't you ask this question and get that started? I'll go ahead and get the material now.
Dr. Nirnberger, would you describe in detail what you did prior to joining the ballistic range of Army weapons in the spring of 1930s? And then describe what, when you went to Kummersdorf, what work started there and what materials became available from the DFR?
It's a long story. I was an active officer in the German Army. And after after I did my examination for studying, I went to Technical University in Berlin. Studied from 1925 to 1929. And I wrote my master's degree at that time, in 1929. And 29, I was already in contact with the Board of Ordnance because I wanted to develop long-range guns. But when I came here, I got told that I had to develop rockets as a military weapon. And it didn't help that I said I wouldn't do it, but they told me I had to do it. And I jumped into the field because I was very much interested. I was the third establishment and developed between the years of 1929 to 1934 or 35, the first operational solid rocket range of approximately 4 to 6 miles, and later on, 8 to 10 miles.
I guess there were a lot of problems in packing the propellant.
Tremendous problems. We had a lot of explosions. First, we used black powder, as the old concrete used in England, and the Chinese used. And finally, we switched over to smokeless powder and started increasing range. The only thing which I think is of very importance is that we changed the location of the warhead from the front to the end, to the rear end, because we found out that they were supposed to be used deep poisoning areas where poison gas was used. Mm-hmm. The 50 neutral stuff spread out over the area.
Neutralized.
But the effect was that with the warhead in front of the rocket, that the whole mutant rising stuff went into crater, and that was not spread out. And with the idea to use to put the warhead in the rear, shows that the rocket was used as a proximity field.
Right.
And then
probe.
Yeah. Then the real effect was outside the crater over the area in the US, that was wonderful. In 1930, I got told I should develop a liquid rocket tube.
For longer range, yeah.
For long range. Yeah. Little blades, long range guns, and the field of fast range. And what I did was that I first went out and to find out what was legal on the journey. At that time, in the press, in the papers, in the newspapers, there were a lot of articles of going to the moon, these rockets, the new age of rockets, they comment about new ones. I went to a different vendor and found out that they had no idea what it was all about. They just wrote articles. They had now test facilities, there's a launching facility, there's a put together, stumbled together, path, and hit 90.9% explosion. It was no scientific research. Possibly not. And at that time, I met for the first time Dr. Von Braun. At that time, he was a driver, a car driver at the rocket airport in Berlin. And we in the Federal Army had no intention to do our work ourselves. We supported these inventors with money to get first results. And so one of the conductors was given to the rocket test center in the new Rheinickendorf, the Nebel and Brown over the working, and they were supposed to develop a small liquid rocket with a range of approximately 3 kilometers. And they came up with that thing and wanted to prove it in Kummersdorf on the firing range. And the thing after leaving the launching facility, it turned in the right angle and crashed 100 yards from the launching site in the woods. And that finished that. And I proposed to my superior general back at that time that he should give me the money and I would take him a test facility in Kummersdorf that he could test all the inventors and all the but they pretended to be able to test that, and even if it didn't work, we should start our work ourselves. And he gave me the permission, but I didn't get any money. And that was a time where he finally decided that all departments of the Board of Ordnance, Research and Development, should give us 10% of their allotted money. So I had a budget. And it is practically started. He gave me one small area in Kummersdorf located to the west of the firing range. We call it Kummersdorf West, Kummersdorf West. And in this we built the first building and we started with a City already before men. And I hired Jennifer Brown and met him once more and asked him if he would join us. We would do our work ourselves, so we had better control about everything. And next day he came to the Board of Ordnance and accepted the position. And I made him a foot reference to a liquid rocket, especially the Jennifer Brown at that time. The next one was Mr. Riedel, Engineer Riedel, who was engineer at the Highland liquid oxygen factory in Germany, where what is the name of the member who made the first motor car, rocket driven car?
Open?
Hawaii,
McFarlane.
He died in his arm at that time. And Highland at that time got scared after he had his accident in the factory, and he stopped all work on the regard. And Riedel had another experience with liquid oxygen, and I attached him to von Braun. Braun was a little bit puny, but the future, and Riedel was a man which put his feet on the ground. And from the other inventor group, one guy interested me most, that was Mr. Rudolph. Rudolph was came to me one day and asked for a contact. And I gave him a contact and told him I want him to develop a liquid rocket, a combination consisting of an oxygen tank, an alcohol tank, and the combustion chamber in the alcohol tank, within the alcohol tank, so it could be cooled, made out of copper, and could produce a thrust of 300 pounds. 600 pounds of the 300 kilos. And after 6 months, Rudolf came to Kummerstorff and showed it to us and the president he had, and it worked. And we hired him. Now we had three. And the fourth was a mechanic, Primo, Mr. Primo. And he did all the hard work on the work we did ourselves in the development of the first project. We developed the first rocket motor, was an aluminum rocket motor with 300 kilo thrust. And we took the facility for that, and you know that the
What was your employment history? Did you have a pretty good up between 33 and 36? Were you hiring quite a few people in?
A Brown joined me in Kummerstorff in 1932. And at that time, at liquid rocket, we had about two men, and then came Brown, then Riedel, and then Rudolph. That was all. Later on, we were 24, 25, and jumped within a year to 25. And then we went to 100 in 1934. In 1905, we had approximately 80.
About 35.
Yeah.
80.
80, yeah. In 36, we had the two with the first motor, which is A3. A1, A2, we hired in 1935. And then we decided that Kummerstorff was too dangerous.
And that's when we made
Then Brown went up to Bali Street and found him in England. And I went up there and accepted it. And we moved in 1937. We moved to England.
So the Air Force actually bought that?
Yeah, first bought it.
That's kind of, you made a deal, an envelope?
Yeah, and we needed money. We knew exactly when we wanted to do the rocket test facility and all the launches, we needed money, and hundreds of millions. There was no doubt about it, and the whole country was a lot of water and no mountains. We could only build above the ground. And this country was with just a lot of money. And we had no drinking water here, we had to get the drinking water from the mainland. Through the penis to the minimum. And that would cost money. Therefore, we proposed to the Air Force at that time that if it liked it, we would build a fifth takeoff for the Air Force, liquid rocket, for the separate containers and later on, built into Bombay itself. And they accepted the proposal and said, okay, if you do that, then you have to support it. And we did a common establishment. It means that you were to take part of human beings as army and other parts would be taken over by the Air Force. That was total management of the United Army.
But did they actually pay for it, you said, in your book?
Yeah.
And did they and pay them
after
later?
You got the general, what's his name?
Well, you have it.
It's in my book, yeah.
Right.
And he accepted that, and then I hope you won't have to wait as long as you have to wait with the army when you make up the man. I bet you within 24 hours I buy that area. And he brought me the next moon. We already bought it for $725,000. $35,000.
Now these are Reich Mark. Now what?
Reichmark.
Would the Reich Mark be worth?
Reich Mark at that time was about only half a dollar.
About half a dollar. Yeah, that's
good. Right. Yeah.
Could we get back to this business thing and I'll put all these away?
Yeah. Before we leave, I just asked you one question on the A4 design. Was that actually designed at Kummersdorf before?
It was designed at Kummersdorf.
He did the layout.
I asked my boss what he wanted. And he told me I want a rocket which in its range surpasses the longest range gun.
Mm-hmm.
And I set up the specification. I said, sitting there, I want it twice the range of the Parisian gun
mm-hmm.
and 10 times the payload of the Parisian gun.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that was the art.
That was the power.
Specification, not more.
Mm-hmm.
Then nowadays, you know, it's a big book. Mm-hmm. I wrote one thing. How it is, it was up to us.
Yeah.
And we had the first layout done by Riedel
mm-hmm.
in 1934.
Mm-hmm.
This layout was a U2 in Booth for the most significant lighter weight construction. And our construction bureau consisting of 4 or 5 men with Riedel, Hillman, and some other guys, they designed, they made better designs. But when we calculated how much fuel we needed and how much oxygen, we find out that the thing would be approximately 30 feet, more than 30 feet long, and almost 10 feet diameter.
Mm. Big and fast.
Yeah, big and fast. And that wasn't what we wanted. We said we had to get better performance. I mean, our performance was pretty bad. Our accuracy was bad, and the impulse was bad. And that would take longer. And we decided we put the other paper on the design on the map and everything we had about the four in the star and star development. A rocket which you could actually test in flight. It was the A5.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And we concentrated on the A5, A3 we had, A5, and we started. And we picked it up when the war broke out. 1939, we picked all drawings out of the star and started redesigning it and recalculating it. That therefore it comes as the five or five
before
the war.
I was wondering, does anyone still have some of these early configurations and layouts you think anywhere else? Could someone show us what these look like?
I don't think
they all
disappeared. They all disappeared.
I went
to that bomb to the Kinemundum. We had a museum there, the same museum here. And in this museum, there are all our first rocket motors, our first drawings, our first layouts, and everything that was in this museum. And it was the same, of the same importance for us as the museum. Mm-hmm.
And that was all
history. And that was Bombay. It was one of the first buildings which turned completely down.
Oh, okay. Well, that explains why that's such a terrible atmosphere. Let me go on to this, just to finish this up. This blizzard, we're black to blizzard, and helping to get these maps off. This is supposed to be a map of the Blizna area made by the intelligence group and by, and this is the English version of
the occupiers.
Yeah. The British intelligence group. This is Merriman, Gowan, and others that went in there. Does this look fairly accurate? North, they have north. That must be one here. Nope. He's one of our things. You guys are here.
We're coming back. We're discussing again the Blizner situation.
Okay. Yeah. It's a many parts of the target area into measuring of the impact of Lieutenant Group Tessel.
Mm-hmm.
And he is still living in Germany. We know that. And he visited me a couple of years ago in Buffalo. And he should know exactly where the target is there.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't remember anymore exactly where it is. But Tarnati, I know we fired
against Tarnati. We definitely fired against Tarnati.
Okay,
against that area.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now, if that... So, then, we, as far as I know, let's get the big map out here. The Haida Kraut area
is
over here. In the Tuchel, you say Tuchel?
Tuchelheide.
Tuchelheide, yeah. And that is all in here. And there's the little town of Tuchel.
No, Tuchel.
You're fairly near that one, too.
Yeah.
Now, but if the...
You couldn't have... Mike Rodder and I was going there.
But then you couldn't have launched against these sites.
No.
So, I just wondered. I don't know. We thought that you went south. But I don't know. I have no idea of where you... over in this way, so you're fighting roughly southwest, but your targets were on which side of Warsaw?
Look at this, was 2 miles.
So you're fighting at maximum range. Okay.
In
the southwest direction.
Yeah.
Well, in that case, then, this is not 200 miles, these two sites.
Yeah, but Tarnaki is.
But Tarnaki is.
Yeah.
So these are probably some interim tests.
Yeah, right.
Okay. But would you say the Tarnaki area is your major
main target?
Main target area. Mm-hmm. Okay. And in this case, we go 200 miles roughly in the southwest direction.
Tarnaki is here.
Well, Tarnaki is right here. Here's Tarnaki.
Now, how many miles is that?
Well, that's a bit more. The man we meet in Germany is Lieutenant Dokula.
Yeah.
How do you spell that name?
D-O-R-T-S-G-H.
Okay, so I'll check his name on the list in a few minutes and we'll get out there. Okay, I think that
clears up the Blizner situation. There's always some confusion in my mind if
that's what we had there. Okay, what's the next thing, Doug?
Well, I wanted to ask a question about the Russian prisoner of war people that were used as draftsmen, how this all came about. I think there was a drafting pool.
Yeah.
POWs
from the Russian side. I tell you that the girls when we meet of craftsmen and engineers and so on, probably before you're in the production, you have to be ready for production. We were looking for people, qualified people. I couldn't find them in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
You know that the Germans use our prisoner of war with some skills for some service in industry and the onion factories. And the only source which was used was the Russian officers.
Mm-hmm.
The Russian officers had all the technical background. In Russia, nobody could become an officer if he didn't have a technical degree.
Oh, really?
Master or foreman or anything, particularly put in the background. And so it was the first choice. And somebody made a proposal, I think we used this untapped source. Said, okay, we build it. The Chinese person, which is agreed very well, and asked the Russian and Russian officer to the telephone and all the people work. And they get part of them. And then we started by some 150, 200, and then made the detailed drawings. As the drawings were done by us, but we know the drawings and ink, sometimes with the ink, they did that. Yeah? And, but they wanted some handiwork too. They didn't want only the drawings, but they wanted some things, what is happier.
Really?
Yeah. And then we put out graphite, rubber, controlling Mm-hmm. That is. In your plant, in so many factors, you control other soldiers before and do increase the number of people.
What happened towards the end of the war to that group?
I don't know what happened. I left Kinemundi, you know, in October 1943.
Yeah.
And it just don't know what happened.
Well, does that feel return to Russia after the war?
Yeah, nothing to see them.
Yeah. No, yeah, they're all affected. No.
They certainly had experience in large lines.
Yeah, no, they didn't.
No.
What they learned was some small details.
Yeah.
But they couldn't come to any conclusions as to what that was.
They didn't know. No,
they didn't know.
You know, there's no Russian spies penetrated to the Middle East.
I explained the man earlier, no.
Yeah.
But my time, not.
Yeah.
What you reckon you spoke about the full intelligence, that hadn't been in the left. The effort, not east,
not east.
In east we had nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I know only one has been done. I was a prisoner of war in England. I was supposed to go to Germany. And they brought me to London and to Kensington prison. And at that time in the Kensington prison, he was a British officer, intelligence officer, who worked during the war and the staff of Kidmaster in Italy. He spoke fluent in German, and he was nice heart, and he was a liberal. And he had published an article in the newspaper that I read that Kinemunde was full of British spies, because he knew everything about Kinemunde. And when I came to him, I asked, I wanted to talk to this guy. And he called me and said, you know what, never any chair. I asked to talk to me. I asked him. And I said, why do you want to talk to me? I said, I want to know if it's the truth that you can be newspaper. I was commanding the news in 1933 October, and I know positively that you didn't know any spies. And besides that, you didn't even know the names of the leading people in Germany in January, February 1945. You cut your fires to stop down and ask them what their purpose was, what they wanted to find out. Because you wanted to know the names of the Kinemunde leading people. How could you have spies in Kinemunde and they didn't even know who was leading them there? Why do you want to know that? Why do you want to know that? And I told him, because I wanted to see. Nothing else than to see. Nobody didn't know but you hit him, the guy outside of him.
Well, let's see now. I have just a short question. Do you have a picture of the Wilhelm Boat from his dummy rocket? I'm just curious about that.
Thank you.
No.
You do have a picture, I think, of the first mock-up of the A4.
Yeah.
Wood mock-up.
I heard a picture of the boat. I think I'll know that picture.
Some of these are short questions. The report made to the Minister of National Defense, which proposed in 1929 that military rockets be developed. Who was the minister? Do you remember who he was at that time?
Blumberg. Kidmaster Blumberg.
Blumberg. And what action was taken? What did that 1929 report? Did
I think that was the reason. At that time, I was in the Board of Ordnance. And I think it was with my boss, Professor Becker, I got an order, or let's say a recommendation, or something like that, from his boss, from that he should look into the possibility to develop, to make legal weapons out of rockets. And that may be the reason that Becker ordered me, because my
master,
my determination is not my master degree, but excellent. That he ordered me to develop and to look into
I guess that report disappeared. Never saw it, yeah.
I see. Okay.
And also...
Yeah.
Never
never saw it.
Yeah, I see.
Okay. And also Colonels and Rick Sawson and Colonel and General Kessel, and they were involved in the early stages.
Rick Sawson was my partner in the effort. He had to do this to work in the army. He did it almost everything in the effort. And Catherine was the opposite of Colonel Becker. Colonel Becker was the army owner, boss, and Colonel Catherine was the effort owner. And they both agreed in many, many things and talked with him rather than in a basic preparation. And then the question to the members came up. Catherine and Becker agreed.
They were sort of parallel.
And Rick Sawson was the first to realize the importance of water propulsion to airplanes. And he developed at this time power banks for hunting, airplanes in Simmerstone, and the first year out for assistance of the bomber. And Rick Sawson was very much interested in that. And since he developed the upper signal in the facility, even the army developed before the airport, when he was very much interested in the system in the area.
Did he stay active in this program?
No.
He didn't
stay. He went to the
Islamic
War, you know.
What was Professor Becker's quarrel with Hitler that led to the former the suicide? You mentioned that
Becker was the chief of the army.
Hitler
ordered the occupation of Norway to prevent the British from occupying Norway and opening the ground for attack. He ordered Becker that out of Europe in Norway should be protected by our heavy guns, guns. And those that the British fleet could not penetrate into the fjords of Norway. And as I told him, I can put the guns there, but I don't have the ammunition. The senses, and then Hitler got one of his famous explosions, and told him, "Dear General, you are a chief of war, and you should know that for this time, the Azuma, for this time, Germany is definitely ammunition for four, and that he knew exactly how many men, where they were, what caliber, and how much ammunition was in his mind, and in his piece of paper. He starts throwing them. And if you don't know that, it's my chief of war of my chief of war of honor, I fire you." And then he tore his epaulets from his uniform and degrades him to become soldier.
Columbus.
And then the guy came home to the moon. And the next morning he was out of his window and saw that car coming in his yard. He threw it open at him. And he thought he came to arrest him and he took him back.
What then? I
said, But it wasn't that. It was just to deliver your paper.
Oh.
He was too nervous. He was not that. And then he took the window. Not here. He tried him to kill those who
tried. Hitler really was able to retain an enormous amount of information.
Here's a memory. You told me once, and I was in Florida, with the 8th Corps, and I told him the basis of what he used to do. When Hitler took me down in 1932 in Simmerstein, up and down the firing range, and I asked you what you could do with that rocket, and you gave me 50 feet to that, and now you're telling me that when you see life.
So
really had to be careful. What were your meetings like with Hitler? You met him quite...
But he kept it in his memory, of course. When he came to second time and told him something different, he didn't meet him there.
Now, you met him at the Rassenberg site sometime.
I met him first time in Kummerstein.
In Kummerstein.
In 1933, and I was looking at him in 1936. In Kummerstein, then I met him in Kummerstein.
At Rassenberg.
Okay. In Berlin once
more. And one Berlin once more. Did you go to Berkeley Garden too?
No.
No. Okay. Let's see now. Yeah, I had one question about the
film. I don't deserve to stand after the arrest of Brown.
That's what
I didn't
there.
Go to it yet.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. How long did Tote run the Ministry of Munitions, and how did it interface with your Army Weapons Department? What exactly was Sauer's role in affairs and his regional party office? And why also was industry so worried about Army influence? This whole business was not completely clear to me.
As a fact, was appointed Minister of Ammunition.
Of ammunition?
At the beginning of July 1939. And he set up his ministry, and his item was Sauer. And then that was in the circus of the accident, and he took over.
He took over director. And what happened to Sauer?
Sauer kept his secret.
He kept his secret.
He was very dear. And very, very efficient for him. And he followed the orders of the British like that.
Now, industry was worried about the...
Yeah. And the organization was asked with the ministry, they took over a lot of parts, you know, to the Air Force, with the Air Force, Navy, and the Army. And all his sort of army. And all his connected to the industry. And the ammunition ministry took over the work of all three of them. They said that in one month to be there, etc. And that led to a lot of collision with the different government. And some things were military arrangements, etc. I heard that was it. And as long as that was in charge of the ammunition ministry, there was no collision, more or less. In fact, there was a dandy man in the country when he talked, and he talked personally to the chief of the Board of Honor. But later on, when Sauer got more power, he took orders over the head of the European organization in the Board of Honor. And that's what he believed. He can give a lot of to prioritize the priority to practice. But if you have six attempts, priority practice, they are collided.
They all get first priority.
And one small point, they all come together, they have to go through. And that could only be solved by cutting to the knife through. And that was done by Zawa.
And he was all the nice man.
The effort was cut priority practice. Army would take over and Navy would take over. So each one contacted the spending industry, and they developed the business program and the sales of orders, but Brown was there. Electric instruments were probably. And that collided, and Sauer was known to be separately separated.
So everybody tried to influence Sauer. Did you deal with him a lot personally?
But I must say that he kept his promise.
There
he was a little bit shocked, and he really was. He was studying my book again. And he was at meetings where the chief industry took me to the system to discuss a technical case. And I said, yes, I have left the talk to my friends and staff. I don't care to whom you have to talk to, I want to answer from you now, can you deliver or not? I have to talk. I don't care if you have to talk, can you deliver? If you cannot deliver, you are incapable of leaving the company, you are replaced by this.
Did this all stealth next work?
That was
came into ministry, he had his fourth cut.
Well, he was in the fourth?
Yeah.
Well, Starfish was a man who was a production. He was a man who was an expert. And he did all the production, pre-production work for the war, of four. But when Rudolph and the missionaries came to royalties, the priorities, then Dower took over and this is committee.
Mm-hmm.
Golden Club Committee.
Golden Club Committee. And what?
And Golden Club and Darkness to keep me.
They didn't get along.
Right.
I see. No. So what happened to Darkness?
Because Darkness was much more with his feet on the ground, mm-hmm. and he was more practical, mm-hmm. and Golden Club was human.
Mm-hmm.
In football. 60 books, yeah. And you know that Stalin was sampled for 300 missions a month.
Mm-hmm.
And Dower and his students demanded up to 2,000 missions a month.
Yeah.
Books was impossible to get the raw material. Mm-hmm. And Stalin was nearly the season. Yeah.
So what happened to Stalin?
I don't know what happened. I think he disappeared later on in the ministry.
So you
yeah.
Now, this long-range bombardment commission that you talked a little about in your book, who were, you don't mention the members of it, and I would who were the key
people? The members of the Air Force, of the Navy, the Army, of the industry,
mm-hmm.
of the industry, and some of the Indian Nation.
Mm-hmm. Who was the key?
Professor Peterson.
Now, you mentioned at one time about the burning of VC documents in a castle courtyard. Did you cover that?
Mm-hmm.
You
saw
all that. Look at that, the coat died in the oil tank, and the spirit came in. Did this have a noticeable, immediate effect on your operation?
No,
things went on more like a murder.
It was like I was executing an enemy.
Now, going back to General Tom, he was a director of armaments and commander-in-chief of the Home Front. He's in a both operations. When you reported in September 43,
right.
What happened to your Army Weapons Department? You had it actually...
No.
You said
I was out of the war.
You were out of the... By then you were out.
I was deployed to the Chief
of Staff. Yeah. What was your position at this time?
I was a Commissioner for Special Use.
That was your official title.
And his ex title, I heard, under myself, as the training of the troops, the supervision of the development, the supply of all the weapons to the front, up to the front line, and the training of the troops, and the first title.
And this all came under Tom, overall, he was your direct boss. Now,
but I said that I had to be from,
yeah?
I had the same kinds of operations for the launching of the run and everything.
Yeah.
I was inspector of the group too, and I had everything for that connected to the But then when Himmler, when the attempt was made in the last, Himmler
put Chandler in charge of the front. And then he was the division.
That didn't have to do with
And then we had a meeting with Colonel Fromm, and he said, okay, you two sound over to the next room and write your, what's it called? But you have to do a year.
But it was Hamlet.
And you, No, it was Hamlet. It was Fromm and Chandler and myself.
Oh, by the time Chandler had come into
yeah.
the
year. And you wrote, you were forced to sign it and come from town.
And that became an agreement.
That means Pamela was, from the moment the supply delivered, to the London. That was his deal.
And he was really a terrible character.
Yeah.
I don't know what anybody felt good about.
And the home front of his development, of his training, supply, and
But what was Himmler like himself? What are your personal recollections? He came to kind of Monday night.
You would never think that this man, he wasn't supposed to know philosophy. Nothing more than a small village. He looked exactly this. He spoke very softly, he was very nice man, by the time he was and he was stuck, he couldn't trust him.
Yeah, you knew it, he trusted him as well.
You couldn't trust him. And then when you cast this hand, I talked about the officers who worked in the Crawford Royal, and his own was, this is the kind of how to start the assessment. And he went along the fence. He looked at the prisoner, at the prisoner, at the authority. He looked at them and suddenly he turned around to me and told me, look at the criminal people. It's hardly there. And that was the first time I realized what was in their sight. It was stupid. It was covered and out of shell of darkness and emptiness by the people.
He's incredible, the person to deal with.
When you are among wolves.
I often wonder what Himmler and a man like Goebbels and, would do today if they were born in Germany. What would they be doing right now?
I think that Himmler would have been one citizen.
No, I don't mean that. Let's say they were at their own, if they were born, say, in 1948, what would a man like this do in the modern world?
He would have been a teacher.
He would be a teacher.
He would be a teacher.
And what about Goebbels?
That took me to be a good
lawyer.
Freshman.
That's freshman, Did you know him?
Yeah.
Goebbels?
Yeah. He was very good.
I understand. Everybody, I thought, would be the most intelligent to
him. He was better than him.
What did Obert do? Did he help you much there in front of the mirror? Did he like you work? When you mentioned in your book that one of these A4s made an altitude of 117 miles. That was his peak altitude.
That was done in...
I don't seem to find a date in your book. So you
no, that was done in 2000, it was after the fact.
And you said oil.
From the oil. It was fired from the oil. It was once when we started again firing missiles from Tunamundi.
After the blizzard had fallen.
After the bombing. Yeah?
Is there any reason why you went for that altitude?
No, the first one didn't know it.
Just enough. Curiosity.
The one was safer. You want to see, but our standard equipment is just to stabilize things. We are still very stressed in high altitude. The control would not be sufficient. But you know, we at that time we were just that by the others, not to let wherever. And That was the thing. They'd like to think a substitute for me.
Up like a boss.
Right up to that end.
Mm-hmm.
In 10 seconds, where do you found?
Yeah.
You pull the fur.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Well, I never have to get the picture.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Here's one question that I didn't understand completely from your book about General Thompson. At one point, Thompson, yes. Yeah. You said that he remained on his job after the April 1943 episode for 18 months. And at another time, you indicated that he was only for a few months. Now, did he go and come back again? Or
no, no.
You said he
was a very good friend of mine.
Uh-huh.
And he always refused me when I hit it. It was in here.
Yeah.
But he was
just for the station commander.
No. Right in there.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And then what happened if you attacked him? You can reach us and keep us early.
Yeah, right. Uh-huh.
So that's the I can't wait to hear. If you will stay here and take over my department,
mm-hmm.
and I tell family to have to come in and send all each day which I did up to that time, I said, there is a few days, and I want to come in with you. My faith now is the means to believe that I did not believe. In the meantime, he did everything that I did not inform the enemy. And you need to know what your artist explanation is. First, you know, if anything, you can improve what you might do at the same time. Or what not. And then I went to train a friend who was giving me this order to get into this situation. But there is no proof whatsoever. Then my friend told me, something you go back to the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And then he went back. And he stayed here for the rest of the 18 months. He stayed 8 months in Berlin. And 1 month he stayed here and then he became back by a command into a country.
Yeah. And now Rothman came in at the
Rothman came in.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Rothman came in 44.
Yeah, that's good.
Then he became, became a private industrial outfit.
Well, that's true.
But that's where it is for TV's writers, but it's long before that.
Yeah, well, this is a title. I don't really remember that. Now, you often talk about the, in the book, and elsewhere, about the two priorities. But when you lost the priority, did you really feel this immediately?
Yeah.
It was it came and went.
Yeah, it did. And the poor time, you had, you lost that priority. Most of the people who practiced it. But the people are the same.
They took them right away. That
right away.
Right away.
Mm-hmm. And I didn't like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I made this famous step forward and going to my old spot, keep myself a thousand and children and engineers.
Mm-hmm.
And he was obviously in my work.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave me this 4,000 children. He took me back out, engineer back out. He took them up into front foot. And the same between the men, there were front soldiers in Sunday, the station, in Germany. The men seemed to be like front soldiers. The whole army was typically random.
And this is done to that DKM, that
is Alpha Engine.
Alpha
Engine. And then to the, in the home front, the front foot system, I think.
I
was a clever guy. And there are so close into the outside of our feet and in the inside. Inside to the near. So I had some captains working on the first class. Captains make us work on their price.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, this is the thing about what I thought.
Because they didn't have uniforms.
Yeah.
What went between them, they had all these overcoats.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Come on.
that came out of this particular
That was a master. I just turned it off one step. No accounting at all.
It was something like my people.
Yeah.
Your superior.
Yeah.
Okay. I was responsible to nobody.
Mm-hmm.
I was responsible to people.
And you said I would defend the budget, though, somewhere.
The budget was up.
Yeah.
But it never get late.
You never did.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they both tried to change forever.
And I was a superior. That's what one of the nations most important. I was the manager in England.
Uh-huh.
And I fought with Brown and with people and give them money, give them the other money.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, so then they think that then we are now in the war and we have to choose money and they destroy everything, they can get it. I won't do it. And then I went back to Berlin, took my other, my friend, my little mother, took another uniform, and I was a superior and scientist.
Did you have some sherry or something to drink?
Yeah, this is water.
Water?
Yeah, that's right.
Here's our Hitler.
Yeah, something that always interests me about that Hitler dream.
You mention it a lot. And is it any, has that ever been down in writing in any memos? Or?
Yes, he wrote about it.
He wrote about it.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, but I mean, did it get into a daily log of Hitler's words? And
I saw that in my child.
Yeah,
it was in memos, right?
Yeah.
I saw that memo which was written to the ammunition minister, and the stick letters, you know, Hitler, as his stick typewriter, the stick letters.
Mm-hmm.
Because his eyes were back, he didn't want to see the most that he used outright.
Mm-hmm.
So he had his letters. And I was, it was in from headquarters, the fear of doom, that never any rocket could reach him. Just as his priority was to be cut.
Yeah, you mentioned when I was in Buffalo, this log which you saw at the grocery store. The woman was either mentioned in Manhattan, so I was not the first one. If there was ever a United States.
No.
Mission.
In Buffalo, John, I was there like a before the war. And there was a guest. And in this guestbook there was a tape. And the tape was written. I believe that that if England should ever come into Britain, like Germany after the last war, that he will find leaders like you, my hero. What was that?